Now is an opportunity for us to ask Craig and Gary questions to pursue things further out of their talk. So I wonder if Gary and Craig could come up. There's Craig, there's Gary, good. If you two grab a microphone each, I think, can you just sort of indicate who you're asking the question of? If you say both, maybe a preference for who gets first crack. And I'll just try and point to people at the appropriate time. So it's sort of put your hand up and wait.
Is this okay? All right. Can I ask the first question?
No.
This is dangerous. Yeah.
I wanted to ask Gary. For a long time, you know, Exodus 18, Moses, Jethro, Moses...
Circumcision?
Jethro. you know, his father-in-law comes and teaches him how to structure and create teams and
delegate.
Yeah. For a long time, I've always been like, that's a good thought, but it's not what the passage is about. It's not about leadership and systems and structures and stuff. But the longer I've gone on, I don't think I know what that passage is about.
Just put him on the spot, why don't you?
So, you know, because you love Moses.
So I'm just waiting. I'm just waiting for a question.
What is that passage about?
It's actually very interesting because Exodus 18 and Deuteronomy, what is it? The first. In the Deuteronomy 4, 3, Moses appoints, chapter 1, actually, Moses appoints leaders in a similar way, which in Deuteronomy is a precursor for disaster. Whereas in Exodus, it just seems to be God is blessing. It's a fulfillment of the command to fill the earth and multiply, that Pharaoh hasn't been able to stop that. And as the nation is formed, it's the sign that even under the persecution in Egypt, they have flourished. God's promises are being fulfilled. And I suspect that's deliberate, because I think in one sense, leadership and organization are an inevitable consequence of growth and blessing and, you know, the ongoing salvation project. And yet, the flip side of that is the more people are involved in the project, the greater the potential for disaster. So in Exodus 18, I think it's pointing to God's blessing as he establishes the people of Israel in chapter 19. But it's also, you see, a similar event, whether it's the same one or not, people argue about, in Deuteronomy 1, where the appointment of judges and structure actually becomes, is the reason why, instead of just doing what God tells them, people do what was essentially wise in their own eyes and refuse to go into the land. So it's kind of leadership is a necessary evil.
Do you have a question for Craig?
Yeah, do you actually?
Yeah. We could just do this up there.
Several, yeah.
In
your session on a pipeline yesterday, you talked, as you talked about, you know, people moving up the layers, and this isn't the one that you that I said I was going to ask you. I asked Craig a question informally yesterday. Did he envisage lots and lots of people moving right up the leadership pipeline? And he said, well, no, of course not. It will actually be a small number of people that move up. But my question then was, when you were talking about people moving across the layers, say from men's ministry to kids' ministry, you said there were lots of core skills that were transferable. There were just a few extra ministry-specific skills kind of to add in. Would you say, is there a danger that we actually shift our focus from training people to do gospel ministry with kids or, you know, young people or whoever, to training for leadership? Could you just make a comment on that tension?
Yeah, I think it is a tension.
Yeah.
And I think, I think it would be so easy to spend all of our time focusing on growing ourselves in leadership skills, quote unquote, and neglecting the actual life-on-life training people in discipleship,
yep,
and etc. Absolutely. And I think it is a tension. Rather than it's like a problem that we can solve, or it's an easy way to just to do this and then it won't happen. I think it's a tension that we need to keep wrestling with, where we do need to grow in leadership competencies, mm-hmm, in order to facilitate and structure the blessing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we can restrict it, or the blessing will go elsewhere to other people's churches or something. I don't know how to talk about that. You know, like,
don't go there.
We won't be able to sustain it within ourselves. So that's important. But in one sense, the whole pipeline thing and leadership, the pipeline can be for any organization. You could be a pipeline of, you know, assassins, and you could have teams.
Do they have an organization? Well, they do not.
I don't know, but, you know, if they're listening, I'm willing to work with anyone, yeah. You know, and so it does anything. It's what are you trying to do? If we're trying to make disciples of Jesus, then the pipeline is just a framework that helps us to do that. But if the goal is not to make disciples of Jesus, if it's to make members of my church, yeah, or something like that, then it'll help us to do that, but that might not be the best thing. Yeah.
Okay. Floor. Yeah. Kieran.
My question probably follows on from that. So this weekend, Gary, you've been preaching the word, and Craig, you've been giving us leadership input. This is a question about your ministry. I'm interested, Craig, in what your ministry of the word looks like, and Gary, what your ministry of
this could be a long answer. Gary, do you want to go first?
No.
That's called leadership.
All right. Yeah, like I'm a local church pastor. So probably 1 out of 2 weeks I'm preaching. At the moment we're preaching through Amos. Sunday I'm preaching Amos chapter 9. You know, I lead a small group, discipling people, have conversations with people where I share the message of Jesus and ask them to repent and put their trust in him. I'm just a normal pastor. So my ministry is a word ministry, a discipleship ministry, but the flavor of it, I suppose, what I get asked to come and talk, you know, no one asked me to come and talk about preaching because there's better, you know, preachers. No one asked me to do that. But I think the particular flavor of my ministry is just enabling gospel ministry to happen at multiple layers and to expand and multiply the number of people doing that kind of work at my local church. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
I'm really a kind of small church. Instinctively, I'm a natural fly by the seat of my pants, cast a big vision and preach the gospel, sort of accidental leader. And I think the challenge for me actually in going to work at QTC has been having to learn some hard skills in a context where it's actually on a week-to-week basis. You know, there are 13 of us work full-time there. They're not all directly answerable to me, but, you know, I kind of head the organization, trying to work out how to lead those people in a context where there's a sense in which we're doing the same thing over and over and over and over again. You know, there's a theological college is a bit different from a local church. And so I think I realized sort of saying, look, there's a hill, let's go take it for the gospel, which I think I'd been doing, you know, for, you know, 17 years in Ireland. Doesn't really work when you're in a theological college. And I'm not just saying this because I'd actually only met Craig 2 weeks ago. for 30 seconds in QTC when our conversation was, see you in 2 weeks in WA. I said, I'm really glad you're going to be there, because honestly, I rather reluctantly started to read his book and was quite significantly convicted about a lot of things that I was doing, small things that I was doing badly. You know, and even, you know, continue to work on some of the things. Like, I actually took a picture of the last night's quadrilateral. I know it's hard to remember from all the quadrilaterals, but last night, you know, but about, you know, what, because one of the things I had to work through with my PA, you know, she came to me and said, you really need to tell me, like, where each task fits, because she'd worked out that there were some things that I just wanted her to do and I didn't want to hear about again. And there were other things that I actually almost wanted to sit beside her, you know, while we worked through it together. And I was just expecting her to know, because it was, for me, it was kind of obvious, you know. So I've actually greatly benefited, and I've kind of put in a lot of different things. Like, for honestly, one specific, meetings, running meetings. If you haven't got Craig's book, or I know this would be a really strange thought, if you got it last year and it's just sat on your, you know, books I might get around to reading shelf, since then, even just read the bit on meetings, because it's completely convicted me and transformed my approach. If I'm leading meetings now, I really do prepare well for the benefit of the other people in the meeting, rather than thinking, I have so many other more exciting things, more important things to do than be at this meeting. I'll just kind of roll up and see where we go. So I think, you know, I've been greatly helped by Craig's stuff and a growing awareness that you have to think these things through for the sake of the other people I work with. Yeah.
Thank you. Chris has got a microphone. Yeah. Jason?
G'day. I have a question, or two questions actually, for Craig. It sounds like some of the stuff you've been talking about would work really well in a larger church context where you've got a lot of volunteers. How would it look different in a small church where you don't have many volunteers? And the second part of the question is, how would you actually raise up more volunteers if there are basically none without burning out, you know, the few that you've got?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it would look, I think it does look largely the same in a small church than it does in a big church. So our church is partnered with another church that's about 30 or 40 people. So our church is on a Sunday somewhere around, say, 500, depending. That's adults and kids. But I think it works the same. It's just layers. There's not as many layers. You just have maybe the leaders and then the minister. Probably. There's just like a two-layer system or something. I think it would work the same. I think just because you don't want to overstructure it. That's the thing, right? You don't want too many layers. It's a waste. But the system, the principles are the same. That the work, that the ministry that's happening here and the ministry that then happens if there's a team leader, there are some significant shifts that have to take place. I think that's true whether there's 5 volunteers or 50. That's still true. So I think it works just exactly the same way. I know it feels like it's a big church system, but it's really not. It'll work in any size. Raising up volunteers, though, I mean, if I had the answer to that, man... Yeah, man, I would sell books. Yeah. Like, that. Raising up volunteers is just... It's complicated, right? There's so many inputs on that. There's the preaching that's happening and convicting people to serve and to do hard things and the urgency of the task and all of that stuff. So all of that's happening. The preaching, the small group Bible... looking, you know, like all that's happening. But even if you've got people who are just interested, you know, or keen, then you got to find these people and work out how to deploy them and where to deploy them and what they want to do. I mean, there's so much happening in there. My one big broad tip is to find a way to push recruitment to as many people as possible. So it's not just the minister who has to recruit, but that people who are already leading or already involved also have the authority to recruit. Now, you need to put in place some probably some systems to make sure that works okay. The way that we make this work is we post a little post onto our Facebook group, like our kids minister did this literally 2 weeks ago. Post into the group, hey, we want to recruit people. Here's the things to think about. We want to make sure they're a Christian. We want to make sure that their life, that if a kid imitated them, it would be vaguely worth imitating. Had a few things like that. Here are some things to check. Not all of these are red flags. The Christian one's probably a red flag. Everything else is maybe an orange flag. It's not no, but it's let's go slow. So, but feel free to recruit anyone who seems to fit this kind of thing. If you love kids ministry and you think they'd be good, talk to them and then then tell me who they are and I'll invite them to our Kids Ministry 101, where anyone who's involved, we can come and meet at my house or whatever for an hour, and I'll talk through how kids ministry works at our church, what we're trying to do and who you need to be, some more specifics about some of that kind of safe ministry stuff, you know, some specifics, and then we'll go from there, you know. But so we try and press the recruitment to as many people as possible. One, because, you know, sometimes people know people better than I do. Not all the time, but, you know, a lot of the time. And then two, there's now, say, six of us who are trying to recruit, not just one of us. So that'd be that's just a tip that you could take. But man, if I knew how to raise up, like our church doesn't have enough volunteers for all the things that we want to do. I suspect that's every church. It's not enough people, or we're doing too many things and we need to stop doing some things. That's probably more like it.
Jared?
Hi there. I just have a question for both Craig and Gary, I guess, but Craig might want to answer first. I'm thinking in light of the pipeline, how do you get people to understand that part of leadership is service? So not thinking, oh, I'm above this person, but actually thinking I'm serving the people I'm leading.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I think that all comes into just the foundational, what are we building? And we're building disciples of the crucified Lord Jesus. And so servanthood is the heart of leadership. And so that's just kind of just built into the culture of everything that we do. It's assumed and it's explicit that what everyone's doing, no matter what layer you're on, you are serving the people that you lead, is just like bread and butter fundamental. So, but it is a constant fight. I mean, I think no matter what system and structure, whether you have pipeline or you think it's ridiculous and you do something else, no matter what you have, you'll always have the impulse that you need to get to the top, because I think that's just our world and we have to just fight against it no matter what. Whether you turn the thing on the side and you make the pipeline go sideways or you do it so that the top is at the bottom, everyone knows how it works. I mean, that doesn't trick anybody. So I think it just needs to be built into it that leadership is service, that leadership is about loving, that we're following the crucified Jesus, that's what leadership is. You know, servant leadership is just leadership. If you just drill that in, no matter what layer you're at, your job is to serve those who work with you and under you. I think that's how you do it.
I think it falls to the existing leaders and especially the senior leaders to set an example. It's kind of old-fashioned, you know, but no. I think the danger is that the more senior we get, the less we do, because there are people who are coming in who are freeing us up. And in part, that's good and right. But it also, I think it's also really important that sometimes if you're the senior guy, that you're packing up the chairs or you're putting out the chairs. That you don't have to be always the first one there and the last one to leave, but sometimes it's appropriate that you make sure if there's a church lunch that you are having a fight with the other leaders to be the last person to get your food. I know that can become silly and become kind of inverted, you know, kind of, you know, like displayed humility. But I think actually I'd rather verge on that side. You know, so I think that's important. You know, I'll touch on that in the last talk. So thanks.
Yeah, Matt.
I think that's a really tricky question, because if we've been mastered by the gospel, we long to see the church grow. We long to see people flourish in their relationship with Jesus. And just as Tim's been saying, we long to see more people come to Christ. In a sense, we can never be happy with a lack of growth. But on the other hand, you know, whilst examining ourselves in everything we do, at the end of the day, we have to keep telling ourselves that growth is not because of us. We can't take the credit if the church goes and if the church grows. And I think there's a sense in which that ultimately we can't blame ourselves if it doesn't. Now, that's got to be nuanced. Sometimes we can be doing all kinds of stupid things that are not helping the gospel or the growth of the gospel. But I've got to say, I've been shaped in this partly by spending 12 years in two pairs of churches, 10Ks apart, same demographics. If anything, we poured more energy into the smaller one. And over 12 years, the larger one went from 33 to about 150. Then we planted another church that's now got 180 adults in it. The kind of refill to 100 and something. The smaller one where we lived next door to the church, went from 13 to 30 to 20 to 25 to 20 to 40 to 25 to 30 in 12 years. And I used to drive between them going, Lord, what's going on here? We actually did more evangelism in the place where we saw less fruit. At the end of the day, the only reason I could sleep at night was because God's sovereign and he gives the increase. So.
You're done. Great. Mark, last question, I think.
Craig, just to follow up on the example you gave before about changing chairs around and setting up chairs, and then... you said, you know, you'd go back and retrain if they came up with a totally different solution. At what level do you allow people, like in your leadership thinking, okay, in my house there's only one way to load the dishwasher. It's my way. You know, it just cannot be done any other way if anybody else does it. But I've started to realize that means I load the dishwasher all the time. And if I want other people to take over that job, I need to let them do it the way they would do it. So I've tried to train them into how to do it, but they end up coming up with wrong ways to do it all the time, just different ways. So in the leadership thinking and the thinking that you've done on leadership, at what point do you say, you know what, actually I'm going to let them, even though I find it annoying or I find it troublesome, I'm going to let them and then really genuinely take your hands off. And yeah, at what point do you say that's good or not good or how do you evaluate that?
I mean, I think that's, again, that's tricky. In the early time, like if someone's new to doing something, then I want them to do it my way because they don't know any other way. So here's my way. I want you to do it like this. But once they become proficient at doing it my way, and they understand what I'm trying to do and why I do it this way, then I think I need to let them figure out better ways to do it that achieves the purposes that I want it to achieve, but that's not necessarily doing it my way. Like the chairs is hard because there's only so many ways you can do that. But, you know, like I know the German army used to be like just an amazing army who would win, and they had a thing called mission control, was their sort of like philosophy, which was the head office, you know, the generals or whatever, would dictate what the objectives of the mission was, but then how it was to be then executed was up to the ones who were on the ground at the time. If the plan was to go over that bridge and take that village, but the bridge had been blown up, then on the ground they knew we got to go around, we got to find another way, we got to, because they had the authority on the ground. They knew they had to take the village, but it was, and they knew the plan, but it was up to them. But then when Hitler kind of took over, he wanted to control the armies himself and control where they were. And so there was a time when all the tanks were ready to leave and the Allies were coming and taking the beach or whatever it was, taking the territory. And the story is that Hitler was asleep, like he slept in. And none of his inner circle, like you didn't wake the Führer. So no one woke him up, and the Allies just stormed the beach and were taking ground, and the tanks were just sitting there waiting. If he had have woken up and said, hey, tanks, it's time for you to go, we would not have won that arena. But because he was asleep and mission control was now not how the army worked, the Allies won and pushed the Germans back. But that wouldn't have happened to the German army, you know, 100 years earlier, because they were a machine. So anyway, point of that story is that I want to say to the people on my teams, this is what we want to achieve, and this is why we want to achieve it, but how they get there is largely up to them. Chairs being perhaps an exception. But, you know, generally speaking, my teams have freedom. I give them what I want to see happen, the end result, where we need to get to, how they get there, it's up to them. I call it kind of leading like a jigsaw puzzle. Like you have the box, this is what the jigsaw is supposed to look like, but you can put the pieces in any order you want, so long as at the end you get the picture on the box. And that's kind of what I want. I want them, as long as we end up with the picture on the box, put those pieces any order you want, as long as we get there. You know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. And now I think that's really important, that the control at the level of, you know, like tactics, at the level of being too controlling, often undermines the ability and the genius of the people on the team. So point of this, early, do it my way. But what I really want is, here's why we're doing it like this. Here's the objective that we're trying to achieve. And then you have freedom to find the best way to do it.
Great. Thank you. I'm going to call a halt at that point. You may get some more time over afternoon tea.